Welcome to No Room for Phonies.
Episode 107.
And we're still on Books Worth Reading. And this one is called Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When the Stakes Are High.
And it has a lot of authors.
Yeah.
Joseph Grenny, Kelly Carey Patterson, Ron McMillan, Al Switzer, and Emily Gregory.
So this is like the third edition of this book.
Okay, so it's been around for a while.
The single biggest problem in communication is the illusion that it has taken place. So I thought that was...
That's a quote by George Bernard Shaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's really good.
And I mean, there's a lot to this book, so I'm just kind of trying to hit the highlights, but it was hard because there's a lot to it.
Every chapter was quite good.
So basically the start of it is that most human problems lie in how people behave when we disagree about high stakes emotional issues. I mean, that's fairly...
And that goes for couples, for parents and children,
right,
to workplace.
Oh yeah, it's not just a workplace thing.
Social media.
A culture of intellectual and emotional honesty influences change. So if you can get to a culture where you can, you know, have this kind of crucial conversation and be honest with each other, you can have a culture of change. Mm-hmm. And I think that explains somewhat why things don't change, right? Because we don't have those embedded cultures. And confronting issues of diversity, inclusion, and even unconscious bias, dealing with remote relationships and diverse cultures, finding ways to candidly and respectfully discuss our political and social differences. It's kind of like doing our best, being our best selves when it matters most. So those are the kinds of things that we get into, that get into these kind of high stakes emotional things where people have a hard time having the conversation. And it's interesting because I'm just reading another book right now about being judgmental and how difficult it is sometimes to like not be dualistic in your thinking and to actually, you know, separate the person from the problem and actually, or the difference of opinion, and not make it, you know, where we're dehumanizing people. So they call a crucial conversation a discussion between two or more people in which they hold opposing opinions about a high stakes issue and where emotions are strong.
Right. So one of the things they say is you can measure how healthy a relationship is based on the length of time or the lag time between when problems are identified and when they're solved.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in a healthy relationship, if I have a problem, I say it, or if I'm upset about something, I say it. I don't wait.
Right.
And in our last one, that was called sandbagging or something, where you kept piling up.
Piling up.
These kinds of conversations increase your influence and they improve your organization.
Or the relationship.
Yes. And you don't back away out of fear. You listen and speak rather than fight or flight.
So, but sometimes your body response is fight or flight. So it is about developing that muscle to put that on, to pause that.
And what this book is about is actually giving you skills. Like within the book, there are a lot of conversations that are like actually reprinted that kind of give you
like
the
example.
Skills.
Okay.
Lots and lots.
Like role play.
So, I mean, I don't get into that.
Like, well, people, that's what they can read.
You can read that.
Our audience, so, you guys can read that.
How do you master a crucial conversation? They call this the fool's choice, believing that if you speak up, you're going to lose a friend. And so their advice is to be 100% honest and 100% respectful at the same time.
And it's called the fool's choice because if you choose to avoid the conversation, you're a fool because it isn't necessarily going to go
that way. No, it's not going to help.
Yeah.
Get all the relevant information from yourself and others out in the open. So they're asking for a free flow of information so that, you know, and I know that, you know, we've all dealt with this when we've been leaders, like staff meetings, where the loud voice is the one sharing and talking all the time. And sometimes the quieter voices And so you do have to look for ways, like your one when you were doing the Adam Grant one about writing.
Yeah, we did brain writing instead of brainstorming.
So that those people who are, you know, quieter, that you make sure all that information gets out. Because what you're trying to create is a dialogue, the free flow, pardon me, of meaning between two or more people and getting to the point where everyone is adding to the shared pool. Because the more exposure you have to more information, it allows you to make better choices. And if people aren't involved in the touchy conversation, they won't be committed to the final decision.
Interesting. Yeah, so, you kind of have to ride through the rough waters to have buy-in.
And it doesn't mean that all decisions are made by consensus. Dialogue skills are learnable. High-stakes interaction have skills involved that can be learned. So then it talks about, like, choosing your topic, how to make sure you're holding the right conversation.
Right, because it's easy to digress and go off topic, especially once it gets emotional and people will throw in red herrings to kind of throw things off or get emotional and attack.
Well, and as Charles Kettering says, a problem well stated is a problem half solved. So if you can actually get the right problem on the table,
then you're halfway there.
That's half the battle. And if you don't have the right conversation on the table, you're often end up in the same conversation over and over again. So basically they're saying, don't choose the easy over the hard. Don't choose the one you think you can win, and don't just focus on the recent event or behavior. It is sometimes appropriate to bring up history. So yeah, that's interesting.
'Cause sometimes the root of something is still festering there, right?
And then they do have this, how do you know you're in the wrong conversation?
Emotions escalate.
Yeah.
And you walk away skeptical, or you feel you're in a deja vu.
Right? Yeah. So that's good. And how do you choose the right topic? Unbundle the issues. Talk about content. Think about the pattern. The first time something happens, it's an incident.
The second time, it's a coincidence.
And the third time, it's a pattern. And then think about relationships. So then he talks about content is basically solving the immediate problem.
Right.
Pattern is expressing the concern that it has become a pattern. And relationship is that identifying trust and competence and respect. And figure out how you want the conversation to go and what you really want out of the conversation. And I've heard this a lot, like keep every less words, more clarity. So watch for topics change. And sometimes you have to kind of put a bookmark in something and return because people are getting hot.
Or somebody else in the conversation wants something completely different and they're trying to derail.
Yes. So you kind of have to, like, it is a skill to develop, and you have to really be willing to commit yourself to it being a crucial conversation and carrying it through. And start with the heart, how to stay focused on what you really want. That's another whole chapter. You have to watch your motive, and you have to make sure that you are working on yourself first and the us part second, so that when you come to the table, it's your heart is in the right place. And you have to know what you really want for yourself and for others, and in for the relationship, what you want long term to happen based on
the outcome of the conversation. I like the next point where you really are supposed to rethink yourself from an emotional and dangerous state into one that puts you back into control. So you can get pretty heightened or shutting down, which stops the conversation.
You move away from dialogue, and you want to be in. You want to. That's one of their big things. As long as you're staying in dialogue
and not mansplaining.
Yes, that's true.
Or womansplaining.
And then there's a whole chapter on how to stay in dialogue when you're angry or scared or hurt. So that's, we need to master our stories and take ownership for the emotional energy that we bring to a conversation. And any set of facts can be used to tell an infinite number of stories. If we take control of our stories, they won't control us. So then they go through a bunch of strategies for helping us manage our stories. Like getting back to the facts and avoiding being a victim or making someone a villain or feeling there is nothing you can do, like getting to that helpless
state. So, and then there's the asking yourself the right questions. So like, what am I pretending not to notice about my role in the problem? Or what would a reasonable, rational, decent person do in this situation?
What do you really want? What should I do right now to move toward what you really want? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that. And then they have a whole lot on safety because people won't engage in dialogue if they don't feel safe. Safety isn't synonymous with comfort, though.
Oh, interesting.
Lack of safety leads to silence or violence.
Mm-hmm.
What is your style under stress? And there is actually a test in there.
What happens?
Like you can actually go in and...
Oh, this reminds me of that training at the college where under stress, some people resort to
it might be whatever. The same
it could be test. Similar. Yeah.
How to make it safe to talk about anything. Other people need to know that you care about their concerns. So you need mutual purpose and mutual respect. So that actually you have to.
And it's tricky because respect is earned, not imposed.
Well, and they talk about, can you respect people you don't respect?
So did they give some tips on that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Share your good intent. Apologize when appropriate. Contrast to fix misunderstandings. Tell what you don't intend for the conversation and clarify what you intend for it to be.
Yeah.
And create a mutual purpose and commit to seeking a mutual purpose. So you can kind of do that whether you respect the person or not.
Yeah, you can, absolutely. And then you can brainstorm new strategies on like how to suspend judgment and think outside the box.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to stop talking about a topic and then rebuild the safety.
Right.
And safety is always about intent, not content. So
this is my intent in this conversation, not what we're actually talking about. Yeah.
And you have to take on the task of generating clear and unmistakable evidence for them that shows that you are what your intentions truly are.
Yeah.
And the question then becomes like, do other people believe that I actually respect them?
Mm-hmm.
So until you have a mutually satisfying solution, you need to be creative. Always verbalize your good intent. Always take a second chance to build safety. Sometimes you don't respond to the content of someone's discouraging statements. So you just kind of let that go.
Water off your back. Water off a duck's back.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the whole thing at the beginning of like really being honest and stating what is the actual thing. We're not talking about people. We're talking about like situations where, you know, that was coming out in the book I was reading about judgment. Like, I'm not passing judgment on you as a person. I might be passing judgment on a behavior.
Right.
Right. So it's not right. So you need to be able to speak persuasively, but not abrasively. So, you have to share facts, tell your story, ask for others' paths. Talk tentatively. You know, your story is a story, not...
It's not necessarily fact.
And encouraging people to test the story by making it safe for others to express their opposing views. And sometimes I feel like that's not even in your control because you have people who shut other people down.
Yeah, in a group.
So you have to be very... And this is where this comes in. You have to have the confidence to say what needs to be said to the person that needs to hear it. So in order for conversations in more of a group setting to be proper, you might have to take a person aside and say, you know, when we start having you, you know, I really need you not to, you know, make this statement.
Or dominate the conversation.
Or
interrupt people.
I need you to be curious and want to know the perspectives of others. And you can always draw a reasonable, rational, decent conclusion. Like you can always get there, but you do have to like take control of the conversation. You can't just let people
run amok.
Yeah. And you don't apologize for your views and you commit to truth over your own ego. And you always, always, always need to be willing to have your conclusions challenged, because every time you allow that to happen, you add meaning to the pool of ideas.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
The only limit to how strongly you can express your opinion is your willingness to be equally vigorous in encouraging others to challenge it. So, you know. And then there's the explore others' paths, how to listen when others blow up or clam up. The more someone cares about an issue, the less likely they are to be on their best behavior. Right?
Yeah, the more passionate you are, you can kind of slip into.
So you can, if you want influence, you have to seek first to understand, and you have to hold on to your belief, but you have to soften your approach.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can share your concerns using facts, not judgments, and listen to everybody in the room. And like I said before, the book also gives many, 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 many examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I think it would be interesting for people to read it is because if you fall into a category where you are taking over conversations and not listening, you might see yourself in some of these.
In some of the examples.
Examples, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Being sincere. Are you sincere and curious and patient? You know, you can get things rolling by just simply expressing interest in another person's view.
Right. Instead of mentioning your own first,
yes.
right? Yeah. Mirroring is important to confirm feelings. So, you know, you can repeat back what you've heard and what you're perceiving. Interesting, I'm reading a different book right now, and it talks about the difference between feelings and or emotions and thoughts. So if you say something like, you know, I feel you are ignoring me, that is actually not a feeling.
No.
It's a thought
that's
about...
what you're thinking about, yeah, someone else.
But it's a thought about... So the feeling could be disrespected, mm-hmm. but
right.
it's a thought. So
yes.
I just thought it was an interesting...
And sometimes when you're getting nowhere, you have to prime the pump, take your best guess at what somebody is thinking.
Yeah, if they've all climbed up.
Just, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, from the conversation, I feel that some of you, like, have
disagree.
Left the conversation or disagree,
yeah.
or don't feel that your ideas are about to be listened to. So I just need, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like you can build on things, agree, like when you're in a conversation, agree when your views are shared and build on something if someone leaves something out.
Right.
And compare when you do differ significantly. And don't suggest others are wrong. Just compare the two views,
mm-hmm.
which I think would be a great skill for people to learn. And just instead of saying, well, I've worked here a long time and I know blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Is to actually, yeah.
Take some time to consider. Yeah.
And then there's the chapter on retake your pen and being resilient when hearing tough feedback.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty cool analogy.
Because
that's
a crucial conversation, is one where you're getting feedback.
Yes, but the retake your pen. So it's the pen is you and your voice about yourself.
Yes.
So other people don't get to grab your pen and write about you.
Yes. No. And you know, they actually say when you're receiving feedback to collect yourself and breathe deeply and name your emotions. And present yourself soothing truths that establish your own safety
and
worth.
Yep.
Understand, be curious, ask questions, ask for examples, and then just listen. Detach yourself from what's being said as though it's being said about somebody else.
Right.
And then you need time to recover, and then you can engage and examine what you were told.
Mm-hmm.
Look for the truth rather than defensively poking holes in it. And if appropriate, you can re-engage with the person who gave you the feedback and acknowledge what you heard, what you accept, and what you commit to do.
Right.
It's
And you can also share your, if you still disagree, you can still share that view in a non-combative
yeah.
way.
And I liked their feed smack is shattering self-confidence and hope and general well-being.
So when you're feed smacked, that's what, instead of gobsmacked, you're feed smacked.
But your own pen, it's your power to define your own worth. Whoever holds your pen can compose the terms of your well-being, and so you need to be in full possession of your own pen. If you live by the compliment, you die by the criticism. So that's
basically, you really have to develop more than a thick skin. You can't really make other people's compliments of you be what gives you your sense and your sense of identity. Or
and what they say, if you are in control of your own pen, then you even handle all the feedback differently, mm-hmm. because you're focusing on understanding and you're not focused on personalizing it and making that person into the villain and you into the victim kind of a thing, right? And then they get into moving to action, taking the crucial conversations into action and results. And they have the four methods of decision making: command, where they're just made
without involving others, consulting. So there's a input is gathered from the group, but then a subset decides.
A vote, just an agreed upon, and consensus is when everyone comes to a decision. And then they always say to finish clearly, determine who does what by when, make the deliverables crystal clear. Set up a time, a follow-up time, record the commitments on the follow-up, and hold people accountable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is not popular.
No.
Particularly in unionized environments, right? Where people, but advice for the tough cases. So they have a whole bunch of different ones. Good works are worth much and cost little. It's a quote by George Herbert.
Okay.
So they're talking about really tough cases like sexual harassment and...
Or other types of harassment or bullying.
Right? Yeah, failed trust, showing no initiative, touchy and personal. And then they have a whole bunch of like, how do you... And you can actually go to their website and look up how do you confront a liar? How do you speak truth to someone in power? How do you talk to someone you don't even respect? How do you speak up for your morals and values? So they actually have
role plays and you can practice
and look it up. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they have a whole chapter on tools for preparing and learning, and they kind of put it all together and they say communication, it's not about communication, it's about results. And in that last chapter, they kind of just overview everything that you've gone through throughout the whole book. But it really does give a different perspective on having a conversation and what you bring to it. And I think one of the worst things we do is rehearse conversations in our heads about
and then
how they're going to turn out.
We set ourselves up to be victims or... usually that's
and
what we set ourselves
and
up to be.
When you've practiced it over and over again, you often go into the conversation highly emotionally charged already because you have
and
all these scenarios.
And you're not going to listen.
No.
You're listening for what you rehearsed. You're not listening for anything new.
No. And the whole thing about honesty, the book, The Dopamine Nation, that I just finished reading as well, says that honesty actually gives us a dopamine rush. So that idea of actually... being like honest and saying
what
is your truth and then listening for other people's truth
can give you a hit of dopamine.
Hit of dopamine. So
after this, our audience is going to be like being brutally honest.
Yeah.
Please let us know if you have a good time being honest.
If you're involved in a situation where you need to have a crucial conversation with anyone, that this book gives you a lot of tips. And what I liked most about the book is that it really required me to be self-reflective about how I approach conversations, rather than looking at how other people are approaching, rather than saying, oh, that's that person. Oh, yeah, no kidding. It actually, a lot of it rests on you and how you approach the situation, how far you get in the conversation.
Right.
And there's tons of tips and things in there and examples and things.
That I did read this book, I remember, but it must have been at least a year ago. So
no, it is.
I'm glad. I'm glad that you have some notes because it's refreshing.
It's one of those things that you know, you kind of can pull something out and practice it for a while, and then go back and pull something else out and practice it for a while. Because I think, you know, there's no way you can remember all of
it.
But if you go through and say, well, I'd really like to work on, you know, retaking my pen, or like going back and not being abrasive, or, you know, how to make the environment safer for people. Like, you could actually pull out a chapter and really practice it, you know, within your situation, whether you're
in any relationship,
husband or kid or whatever,
or work.
So, so Crucial Conversations, and I encourage you to pick up the book, or I don't know if it would be in a library. I imagine it
would be. So by now,
Anyway, on March 15th, we're going to talk about Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. And the author of that book is Harriet Lerner. And
in preparation for reading that book, you can look up online the 5 ways to apologize.
Oh yeah.
by Henry Cloud, and I don't remember his first name, Cloud and Townsend.
Right.
Anyway, there's I don't remember the website. Maybe I'll put the link in the show notes, but basically the 5 ways to apologize.
Yeah. Harriet Lerner has written The Dance of Fear, The Dance of, like, she has written a lot of books.
Right.
But I really do like this book, Why Won't You Apologize? Healing Big Betrayals and Everyday Hurts. So you can join us for that on March 15th. So thank you for joining us today.
On No Room for Phonies.
Crucial Conversations.
Episode 107. Good night.